Blog Talk Radio.
Enjoy happy hour at Dunkin' Donuts from 2 to 8 p.m. with any medium beverage for $2. Energize with a freshly brewed tea or espresso drink. Whatever medium beverage you're drinking, we're serving, and for $2 from 2 to 8 p.m. So stop by Dunkin' today and pick up any medium beverage for $2 from 2 to 8 p.m. and make it the happiest hour of your day. America runs on Dunkin'. Participation may vary, plus applicable taxes, exclusions may apply, limited time offer.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servodidio, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Insight into Healing airs Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. If you have any questions or you'd like to be a guest, you can send an email to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Also, check out my book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos, at www.ccbpublishing.com/aservodidio.html. Well, tonight I have such an incredible show planned. On the line, I have Judy Giovangelo. She has been a teacher and a healer of energy medicine and the law of attraction for 20 years. She is a certified yoga instructor, Reiki, sound and intuitive healer, hypnotherapist, and spiritual counselor. She is the owner of the Grow You Healing and Arts Center in Holliston, leading workshops through her Grow Up programs for youth and families. She is the founder of Ben Speaks Louder Than Words, a nonprofit born to the loss of her 18-year-old son, Ben, to suicide in 2009. Her personal mission is to help sensitive, intuitive people permanently remove the blocks that stand in the way of their dreams by providing an inside-out approach to wellness. Ben Speaks' mission is to provide access to healing and expressive art resources for youth, families, and communities with a vision to provide them with tools to help them develop and evolve. Judy has delivered a powerful message for change to hundreds of youth audiences through her signature Power of Choice presentation, and her organization provides retreats and workshops in the Metro West and Greater Boston area for struggling teens and their families. Judy, welcome to Insight into Healing, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here, Alexa. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Oh, you are so welcome. And I'm so excited to have you on the show. Just by reading your bio, it is so important, the work that you do. Tell us how this all began and how was it for you starting all this?
Well, it was born through the loss of my 18-year-old son, as you said, and, you know, as you read out from the bio. For 18 years, I raised Ben, and I have two other children, my oldest son, Michael, who's now 29, and my daughter, who's now 24. But during the 18 years that Ben was with us, he suffered greatly with severe mental illness. It presented as severe OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. I mean, Ben basically had, every label that we have today in the book over the years of trying to figure out what was quote-unquote wrong with Benjamin. But today, looking back 9 years and over the trajectory of everything I've seen since his death, I'm sure that he was on the autistic spectrum in some way, but he was just not diagnosed because this was, again, 9 years ago when he took his life. And during the 18 years of raising him, I became the healer that I am today. You know, I started to look and source outside of the traditional model because couch therapy and medicine just were not, they weren't enough. And our home was in chaos on a day-to-day basis. Ben suffered greatly through his obsessive compulsiveness. He was in brain locks. It's just a term that I learned from a doctor out of Mass General called Michael Green that just showed us how his brain would completely, get so hot. It's almost like a car engine. It would get so hot that he would end up in a brain lock and not be able to move beyond whatever it is he wanted in that moment. And so this went on for years and years and years. And through yoga, Reiki, meditation, and from the time he was 12 until he was 18, when we started to introduce these alternative modalities, we started to see marked change. And he went from, you know, 80 milligrams of Prozac down to, the day he took his life, he was down to 5 milligrams of Prozac. He went from being behind and taken out of school in middle school to being back in school, catching up academically, passing his MCAS, being invited to a prom by a beautiful girl, getting tall and gorgeous. I mean, his life really turned around in that 6 years through these alternatives. And the day he took his life, I always say, was a fleeting moment of despair. I'm sure he went into a brain lock. And, you know, he'd been back in the mainstream. He had finally, you know, just caught up and had a community of kids who loved him. He was using marijuana to self-cope. We all knew this. His therapist knew this, but he got caught with marijuana at school. And they took away a prom that he had just been invited to by a beautiful girl. It was the first time he was socially accepted in his entire 18 years, socially in his community, and he ended his own life. And I started a nonprofit that day. I knew the name of it, and I haven't stopped. 9 years I have been putting myself out there, being, you know, a speaker, an advocate, a role model for what it means to move through grief and loss and 18 years of unfair, and take the tools that I know that helped him and help others. And, you know, so that's it in a very, I guess, a nutshell. That was a long response, but that's it. That's what, yes. That's how it went down. Yes. Yeah.
And first of all, I just want to commend you for coming on the show and speaking about this personal pain, because I know it is very painful, and it takes a lot of resilience and strength and just integrity to be able to speak about this, and your passion to help others is really commendable. And I would just love to thank you so much for being able to do that. And you bring up so many great points. And I also, you know, when you were saying about all the different illnesses he was suffering, mental illnesses he was suffering from, you know, from 2009 to now, still it's so hard, I think, sometimes finding the right therapist, finding the right treatment, but also being able to find someone that will work with you to address each one of those conditions that he's suffering from individually, because sometimes people treat them all as one, and I think it's being able to treat them individually. So I think it's being able to find someone, a team to work with that can address the different areas, and also about the brain locks, that one fleeting moment, it can be so powerful, so changing. And how do we prepare, if anything, ourselves, our loved ones, and the person that's suffering from it?
Right. And that, I mean, I don't know that we can answer those questions. We want to keep asking them for sure. But, you know, in that moment, if Ben was in a brain lock, there was nothing else that was going to change that. And I don't know that 100% for sure, but I can't imagine when someone takes their own life, especially with someone that had the kind of challenges that he did, that, you know, that he was on one hand the most intuitive, sensitive. I mean, he was this kid who, if he got a fish on a hook and the fish was dying, he would weep over the fish. He was so sensitive. And then on the other side of that, he had this OCD that would put him in these brain locks where he would almost go to his death to get what he wanted. So, you know, it was so bipolar, really. He wasn't diagnosed bipolar, although there was at one time, everybody throws these labels around, and I'm of the belief that, you know, there's a lot of people out there of this energy that I call empathic, and Ben was highly empathic. And I think it's really important that we start to give people who are so sensitive and empathic the tools to navigate their own energy first, and to understand that they are in control of their own energy, no matter what labels they happen to have inside of themselves. That, you know, Ben wore the scarlet letter of OCD. I'm an OCD boy. It was almost like, you know, that's who I am. And what I started to really realize, probably at the point that he was 12 and up to his death, as I was going through my own process of peeling back the onion of my own beliefs inside of myself, my own low self-worth from my own tragic, you know, history and life journey, that, you know, it was so important to come at it from that place. Again, the label became who he was. And, you know, but he was so many other things. He was gifted. He was intuitive. He was sensitive. He was highly creative. I call a kid like him the Bens. There's so many Bens out there. I've spoken in huge audiences and had, you know, people stand if they know a Ben, if they teach a Ben, if they're raising a Ben, or if they are a Ben. And at the end of asking those questions, you know, the whole audience of 1,000 people are standing. So everyone knows a Ben, an intuitive, sensitive,
yeah.
creative kid who beats to his own drum and doesn't fit the mainstream model or the mainstream system. And we keep trying to shove them in it and make them fit. And then we send them this message that they're broken and wrong. And that becomes their early imprint of what they believe about themselves. And then their early imprint, which is rooted in their ego truth, becomes their truth. And then they're stuck inside of that. And we have to figure out how to help them not feed that and become, you know, more true to who they really are. You know, Ben was
yes.
all these things and someone who suffered with something called OCD. He was not an
yes.
he was not OCD, Ben. You know, so
and I think it's so
and that's
important
everything that I speak to.
How
yeah.
you explained, you know, when people try to put you in these boxes and put you in with mainstream, and I think, you know, when hearing the word sensitive, I see it as
yes.
also as a positive. I see it as a strength. And I think in our world, we have to be able to have that as respect. I mean, I it touched my heart to hear you say that your son with that the fish on the hook would really start weeping. I would do the same thing. I mean, we need
right.
more people with that passion and that life and that kindness. And I think we have to be able to see everyone as an individual and not say because someone is able to feel another person's pain and really be in touch with it, that it's called
right.
a negative of sensitive. And I think it's very important with everything that you said to see everybody as an individual and not have to always have them put them in mainstream, which is very important.
Right.
It's hard to make someone force someone and to be something they're not and then tell them they're wrong with who they are
well,
when
and
they can't even really change it.
Right. And that's the model of the mainstream is to, you know, when I go in and I speak in schools, one of the things that I speak to is helping the kids understand, A, that you are 100% responsible for who you're being. Your own thoughts, words, feelings, actions, reactions, and choices create your destiny. So you're responsible for that, no matter who you are. And that your own, you know, negative thoughts are your own inner bully. So you got to address that inner bully first, if you have one, and most people do. And then secondly, to understand that energetically our schools, especially our mainstream schools, are steeped in the energetic at a collective consciousness aspect. This isn't, you know, there's a bunch of bad kids and a bunch of good kids or a bunch of, you know, I call them Teflon kids or Velcro kids, which are the sensitive kids, and the Teflon are the tough kids, you know, but it's a big fish, little fish, you know, if you look at it from a metaphorical standpoint. You've got the big fish, which are the strong kids who fit the mainstream. And then you've got these sensitive, intuitive, empathic, these Bens, who are the bottom feeders. And every time they try to pop up to the top of the pond, what happens? They get pushed down. And kids get that when you give it to them to that way metaphorically. And it's not anybody's fault. And what I say to parents is that when those big fish, you know, get out of high school, now they're in college, they're now in a giant ocean. There's no more, you know, big fish, you know, unless they rise to the top very quickly, which very few do, and they actually become at risk because now they don't, you know, they don't have the resiliency skills. If the Ben gets out of the mainstream high school and into a college, now he's out in that ocean, he can flow a little more freely, they often go on to do very well. It's actually the big fish that are more at risk in the college scene, if that makes sense. But what what the voice of Ben speaks is trying to help kids understand, how do we become collaborators? How do we become contributors? How do we be a hand up instead of a push down to the kid who's hurting? Because what we know today is that the kid who is hurting is the one who is either hurting himself or he's hurting others. He's either, you know, committing suicide, drugging himself, putting himself on opiates, whatever it is, or he's, you know, walking into a school with a gun and becoming violent and killing other people. So until we start to address those kids, those weaker links, I use penguins as an example. The penguins know they're as strong as their weakest link. And so when I speak in a middle school or high school or college, I give that example. Here's the competitive mindset. Here's a collaborative mindset. Your weakest link is your greatest strength. Shift to that.
Wow.
And then become, then learn the tool set of what it means to grow you from the inside out. What are you thinking? What are you saying? Who are you being? choose up.
Yeah.
I choose up is our new hashtag, I choose up. You know, do you choose to go and use opiates because somebody said something mean about you, or do you choose to be a powerful creator? You know, I choose to be kind. I choose to be loving. I choose to be fair. I choose to be in gratitude of what I have instead of always focusing on what I don't have. So that's everything that
I agree with you 100. Yes, I agree with you 100%. What would you say for different a teacher, a parent, or a student himself suffering, or a student who has a friend? How can they make a difference in their everyday activities? So, you know, starting tomorrow when they go back to school, what are some small steps so that we can start helping and reaching out and embracing those that are suffering?
I think everybody knows who the kids are who are suffering. They could point out the bends in a nanosecond. When I speak in a school, it's apparent from the minute you know that I start to speak and speak about this. You know who the big fish are, you know who the little fish are, and you know who the bystanders are. And I think, you know, those are the middle kids, the run-of-the-mill kids that are, you know, that have enough self-esteem that they're just kind of making their way through, and they don't necessarily need to shine, but they're not a bottom feeder. They're not a kid who has, you know, some kind of mental illness or, you know, really difficult home life or whatever. You know, they're called the bystanders. And I think really engaging the bystanders to be more or handpicking, you know, some of the kids that are more kind, compassionate, empathic, to be that hand up, creating teams of kids in the schools that can be the collaborators in the community, that can be the eyes that watch and notice the kid that's sitting alone at the lunchroom table, or the parent that's isolating themselves, or whatever it happens to be, and whether it be corporate or school or wherever people gather, for people to start to be aware of that and just start being kind, being loving, opening an invitation just in a conversation, asking about that person and taking the time to listen to what they have to say, and working on themselves to let go of their labels and their own judgments. I mean, this isn't that person has a problem and I don't. It's, you know, we all struggle. And I think creating a common language that everyone struggles. I use the language of let's get rid of the wooden nose of Pinocchio and get real. I mean, the reality is we all have fear. The reality is we all suffer. The reality is everybody has pain. Everybody has, you know, underlying issues. Everyone has early imprints that say I'm not good enough somewhere deep inside of them. That's just, it's the way it is.
And what an amazing life lesson tool to be able to do that at a school level, a middle school level, a grammar school level, that these children and parents and teachers can grow and use this through their whole life. They should, and they have all these after school programs for everything else. This should really, you know, I would say people need to be trained and educated on these tough topics. I know a lot of people don't want to talk about it, but unfortunately it's there. It's there of everyday life. And
it is.
Having meetings, having classes on this. If people don't want to go to gym class, maybe they should have a class on how can I work on this? How can I become a mentor? How can I be a bystander that helps other people? What can I do? And giving these teachers, students, family members, everyone a tool and say, okay, this is what you can do. Because I think so many times at that point in age when you're in school, you don't know who you really are and your sense of self and identity that's following the crowd. How great would that be to be told it's okay to be an individual and be kind, and this is what you get an award for. This is what you become a valedictorian for being, how many times you stayed with that person who ate lunch every day by themselves and no one spoke
that's
to
and
bullied.
This is going
to
make you popular, right? This is going to make you popular. This is going to help you to be a stand-up. I mean, we're doing a fundraiser. Our first one is called Bounce for Change. It's a town, but it's very city-like. It's a pretty big area. It's called Milford High School in Massachusetts, out in Metro West. And, you know, we're getting all the teams of the kids who are looking for their, school credits and for volunteerism. And so captain of the football team and getting his team together. And so they're doing, we have mini trampolines, 40 mini trampolines going into the youth center. And kids are going to be bouncing for change and learning what it means to be a hand up to the kids who are, you know, suffering, the kids who might be the kid who goes and takes his own life or comes into school with a gun or is is choosing negative ways to express his needs. Because anybody who's doing anything to hurt themselves or others is trying to get the attention of the people around them. We know that. And the reason they're doing that is not because they're a bad human being. It's because they're hurting inside, and they need help. It's a cry for help. And unfortunately, we wait too long, and we miss the signs, and we don't pay attention because we're also self-absorbed in our own what I need to do to be successful in my life. And that's all fear-based. It's all fear consciousness. And it has to shift to love consciousness if we are going to change this.
I would love to ask your opinion on this.
It has to change to love consciousness.
A lot of times I am asked to speak at different places, and a lot of times to younger children. And my book deals with the heroin epidemic, cutting versus suicide, domestic violence, pretty tough topics for young people to talk about, but unfortunately it's in their lives. And I had one
Absolutely.
Person approach me and say, please don't talk about those topics in really deep thing because it triggers all the kids and then we have a hard time. And I was, I could see where it could trigger some children, but I thought, this would be the time to, if they're going to be
right.
triggered anyway, but in a school safe setting, how could we not talk about it when it's right under their noses? Who they know someone or themselves are suffering from this by not talking about it. I, in my professional opinion, felt that it would be more damaging.
Yeah, 100%. I remember it was about 6 months after Benny died, and I was already on the platform, and I'd been invited to a school out in Springboro, Ohio, and I was in front of 850 middle school kids, and this was a very affluent community, actually, and they had just had a suicide. So imagine this, 850 seventh and eighth grade kids, and it was all Lily
wow.
White, all upper middle class, And I just happened to ask these kids, and if there's any principals or administrators who would consider hiring me to come into your school, I want you to hear me now that I would never ask this question today because this was back when I was an early speaker. But, you know, I asked these kids, I said, with a showing of hands, I want to know how many of you are currently labeled with any of the following labels of mental illness and if you're medicated for it. And I said ADD, ADHD, OCD, bipolar disorder, anxiety, or depression. Raise your hand if you're medicated and labeled. And more than 75% of those kids' hands flew up. I said, okay, put your hands down. How many of you are cutting your arms or know someone who is? More than 50% of those kids' hands flew right up. And the teachers on the sidelines, you know, in the gymnasium, their jaws dropped. But, you know, that was 7.5 years ago, 8.5 years ago. And I thought in that moment, Houston, we've got a huge problem. We are a culture that is giving a kid a pill for everything they feel, to stuff them into the box or to make them fit or to make them be something like robots. It's like, you know, like, what are we thinking? We have to teach emotional resiliency. We have to teach kids that it's normal. To feel angry is important, and that if you're going to feel angry, where are you going to channel that anger? That's the important thing, and that's the thing we need to be teaching them, not giving them a pill to stop them from feeling what they feel. And so, you know,
well,
our pharmaceutical drug company,
a young child medication, a pill to stop his anger, how are they ever going to learn how to manage their anger? Yes, their anger may be out of control, but who, if they're always kind of numb and a robot, when they get older
right.
and over 18 and they decide, guess what, I'm not taking this medication. Now they have, you know, what, 12 years of anger or something built up that's
right.
even huger than it was when it first started.
That's
and
right.
now they're dangerous because they're an adult.
That's right. They're going to explode. I use the language, you're either imploding on yourself or you're exploding on others. You're either hurting yourself or you're hurting others. And so, you know, a lot of these medicines, they stop the behavior, but they just put a glaze over the feelings. And then the kids don't have any way to channel those feelings. Then they start, like you said, to look for other ways to release it. And so then they have, but the triggers are not gone. The triggers are buried. You know, then they get triggered for whatever it is that, you know, is the trigger for them. And then they're seeing red, you know, then they're in the red zone in a nanosecond and they have control over the emotions that have been so stuffed inside them for so long. They just explode and they explode on everybody and, you know, in bullets killing kids. I mean, we've really got to get a grip on this. And, you know, I see all this stuff going around about, you know, fixing it from an outside systemic. It's also, you know, take away the guns, take away this, take away that. Everybody's arguing back and forth. It's like, address the cancer of low self-esteem in this country and you'll see change. But until you really address
exactly.
the cancer, I'm going to say it again, cancer of low self-esteem in our youth, nothing can change. And I'm hopeful when I see kids marching, you know, to Washington like they did yesterday. And, you know, that, and I think this millennial generation, my oldest son is 29 now, and he is brilliant and a stand for change, and finally has come out of his own den of addiction and, you know, getting himself drunk for the first 4 years after Benjamin died, and, you know, living in the victim mentality of how unfair it is, and, you know, losing an aunt, two aunts and his grandmother and his parents' marriage just after that. I mean, my kid is resilient. My daughter's resilient too, still struggling with addiction, but it's just, you know, this is what these kids are facing today. They're, everybody's in post-traumatic stress. I mean, when we say mental illness, it makes me crazy because I'm like, number one, people talk about mental illness as though it's something separate from the rest of the body, which it's, it is the body. And secondly, that, you know, that somehow they're not on the spectrum, because I don't know anybody who's not on the spectrum in any given moment, you know, because of what's happening in our world.
Yes. It's not just mental illness is that other person. It's everybody is suffering from something.
Right.
And I think anything that impacts your quality of life, you're suffering from, and it's something to deal with. I think, and being able to take the stigma away and bringing people together to be able to say, this is a positive thing. One, we can bond and we can work together, and two, we can start healing and then giving back what we've learned so others can decide what works for them.
Yes. We're speaking the exact same language. It's, you know, it's collaboration, contribution, love consciousness, raising it in our communities, where we're a hand up to everyone in our community, not a push down or an ignore or an isolate away from. And then at the same time, being given the tools to love yourself, to take full responsibility for yourself, and to address whatever your pain points are with whatever tool it's going to take for you to do that. And Ben speaks language. So we have a care network. It's called Complementary Alternative Resources and Education, to provide a whole child approach to wellness. Because every human is different. I might really benefit from hypnosis, alpha biotics, a little bit of medicine, getting out and running or hiking and getting out in the sun. But, you know, the person standing next to me might need a completely different toolbox for her PTSD or for her way of dealing with the grief and loss of her child. Or her son might need, you know, she has three kids who are all on the spectrum. And, I mean, how many families have kids on the spectrum today? You know, And every one of those kids needs different things. And so how do we help them to identify what's the best toolbox for you, you know, and start to provide. And our organization wants to raise a lot of money so that we can start to give these services to families without them having to have more stress trying to make money to pay for all these alternative modalities. You know, the big pharma has got these people, you know, wrapped in their back pocket. Because it's, you know, it's covered by insurance and, you know, it's a Band-Aid. And it may be one of the pieces, and I would never promote not having medicine because I think some people really benefit from it. But it is not the only tool in the toolbox. And unless you address what's going on underneath that.
An important idea just came up to me is being able to build your toolbox, to create your toolbox, take responsibility for your behaviors, but do this all without judgment and stigma. I think that is the most important thing, that you're not judging yourself, you're not judging someone else. It's not stigma, that you're able to say, hey, this is what I'm suffering from. This is what's going on. Okay, what tools, how can I learn, and let's keep this open dialogue.
Yes.
Well, we're about at the end of the show. How can my listeners find you and follow the work that you're doing?
So you're out of New York and we're in Massachusetts. We would love an opportunity. I would be honored to come and speak in some of your schools out there. I don't know if you guys can open any doors or anybody listening can open any doors for that to happen. But if you're interested in getting us in touch with your PTOs or your schools or your community centers or anywhere where youth and families gather, our organization website is benspeaks.org. You can reach out to us through there. If you're a listener in Massachusetts, we have a lot of great fundraisers coming up. We have a women's retreat in Vermont where you'll be able to engage in learning about an Enneagram, which is a personality characteristics way of looking at your life. We'll have, you know, guided hikes. We just have a lot of great stuff going on. We're doing a comedy show with the guy who connected me to you, Alexa, Jerry Caruso, who does... Jerry Caruso, who does comedy for A Cure. And so he's putting on a show with us. He has Frank Santorelli coming out from Sopranos. We hope to have a sellout event. That's on April 29th at Angry Hams in Framingham. But everything is on our website, benspeaks.org.
Okay.
And
great.
And if you're a listener who is looking for somebody to do some healing work with them, I personally have my own space in Holliston, Mass., and you can find me at judygio.com. And just reach out to
thank
me,
you.
And we can have a conversation.
Great. Judy,
so
thank you so much for coming
so
on this
much.
Evening. It's been my pleasure. And everyone, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Have a good night, and God bless.
Thank you. God bless you, too.
Enjoy.